Now, in a ruling released yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court's conservative majority struck down the use of race-based affirmative action for college admissions. In the ruling against Harvard and the University of North Carolina, the 6-3 majority said colleges may no longer consider race and ethnicity when screening student applicants. UW-Madison Chancellor Jennifer Mnuchin says the ruling means the flagship university will be making modifications to how it selects new students, but says that racial diversity is still a bedrock value. Want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's your reaction to this U.S. Supreme Court decision? Right call, wrong call? What would you like to know about that decision ending the use of race as a factor in college admissions? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Anuj Desai is a law professor at the UW Law School. Anuj, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks so much, Rob. I'm great. It's great to be here.
Let's look at the majority decision first. What were their main grounds for ruling against the universities in this case?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the first and most important thing to understand about the opinion is that the majority was very, very skeptical of the way in which universities, particularly Harvard and UNC, have been using race going, in the past. And in particular, I think they basically decided that the articulation of what the universities have been doing, the so-called diversity rationale, was too nebulous to be what the law refers to as a compelling government interest. And moreover, the way in which the universities were actually implementing the programs felt a little bit too much like a quota type system. They don't say exactly that, but that's you can sort of see the seeds of that in their opinion. So that's really the sort of core that under the Equal Protection Clause for public universities and under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act for private universities that are receiving federal funds, you shouldn't use race in a way that affects some people based on their race.
Yeah, the justification, I think, over the years has gone from something like we are, giving, say, students of color a boost in the admissions process to redress a historical wrong or to benefit those students who might not have opportunities. It's been that idea that all students, I think universities have argued, benefit from having a more diverse campus. Has that been kind of the state of the art in justifying using race as a factor in admissions?
Yes, that's exactly right, Rob. Prior to the 1978 Bakke decision, the broad understanding was exactly the way you've described it, that it was recompense. It was, Lyndon Johnson said, you don't shackle a man for hundreds of years and then put him up at the starting line and expect him to run the same race. So that basic idea was what motivated affirmative action plans, and it's how people, I think, thought of them. But in the Bakke case, only four justices of the Supreme Court agreed that that was a sufficient rationale, and the middle justice, Justice Powell, decided that the diversity rationale, including racial diversity, was the rationale that he would sign on to. And since he was the sort of median voter, so to speak, the one that tipped it over, his view became the prevailing view. And so since then, universities have framed these programs through that diversity rationale. And that's the rationale that the Supreme Court in the Students for Fair Admissions case on Thursday, found a little bit too nebulous, to be perfectly honest.
And can you talk about now the Equal Protections Clause and how it applies here? The plaintiffs, I gather, argue that, as, say, a white student, or I think in some cases Asian American students, they say, you know, whatever the motivation here is for race-based preferences, nudges up in the application process, I lose. I'm being discriminated against. Is that the core of what the court ended up deciding?
Yeah, that is the core. Yeah. I mean, the basic idea, and, you know, maybe I should back up, the decision only applies for public universities and private universities that receive federal funds. Now, to be fair, most universities,
of them, yeah.
That's most of them. There's no doubt about that. It also only applies to selective universities, right? There are a lot of colleges and universities that don't receive more applicants than they can admit. And, those are obviously not, choosing on the basis of, part of their process does not include looking at the race of candidates. The core, I think, was this sense that in these selective universities, admissions is a zero-sum game. And so the way in which the universities were articulating things, and, this is, I think quite accurate, they would do a holistic review of candidates, of applicants, and would admit on the basis of, this holistic review. But, in a world where there's only a fixed number of slots, and that fixed number is far less than the number of applicants, any benefit to one group of candidates necessarily is a detriment to others. And I think that is really a pretty key part of how the court thought of it. And so, yes, the plaintiffs, particularly in the Harvard case, were representing Asian American applicants, and their argument was, we have been discriminated against. Again, one could imagine a lot of ways to set the admissions process up, but that is the core of what the plaintiffs in the case argued.
Talking to Anuj Desai, law professor at the UW Law School, looking at this U.S. Supreme Court decision that says, hey, universities, colleges, if you're receiving money from the federal government, you can't use race as a factor in admissions. You could join in with your reactions to that, your questions about it at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Okay, I mentioned close to home here. The new leader of UW-Madison, Jennifer Mnookin, put out a statement on this. I want to quote from it here. She says, we will, of course, quoting now, adapt our practices to comply with the law. At the same time, I want to reiterate that our commitment to the value of diversity within our community, including racial diversity, remains a bedrock value of the institution. Anuj, if the University of Wisconsin-Madison or any other selective school wants to maintain that value, are there tools in the toolkit they could turn to after this decision to reach that goal?
The short answer is, I think there are. So one very explicit one that the majority referred to is that schools can still take into account the essays that students write. And in particular, if a student has overcome discrimination or has been inspired in some way by, Frederick Douglass or something to that effect, right? I mean, something that might be racial, but that speaks to that individual student's character, the universities are allowed to take those kinds of things into account. What they can't do, though, is take those things into account in the aggregate as to a group, right? As to a racial group, sorry. So they can take into account things that that relate to individuals, individuals' race, even as long as they're thinking about the individual as an individual. So that, I think that's the first thing. The second thing, and I'm not, I honestly don't know enough about UW-Madison or the UW system to know all the different ways in which they, you know, they think about their admissions, but a lot of universities, including particularly Harvard, which was sued here, have preferences for example, donors, preferences for what they call legacies. That means alumni children, preferences for athletes. So those kinds of things have historically, because of the history of our country, have benefited candidates who are white. And the plaintiffs actually in the case said that they, you know, if Harvard got rid of some of those kinds of preferences, they could have an overall system in the aggregate that didn't favor a bunch of groups of people that that were primarily white. So there may be things one can do in other areas of the admissions process. I know a lot of states have what they call, you know, top 10% plans or top 3% plans, where the fact that a state might be geographically segregated becomes part of how the university itself integrates. And by that, what I mean is they basically say, whatever high school you're in, even if it's in, just to take Wisconsin's example, inner city Milwaukee, if you're at the top of, you know, top 5% or top 10% or top 3% of that school, you automatically get in. So that's something, I'm not saying they're going to do that, but Texas did that, for example, and that tends to increase racial diversity simply because there is geographic segregation. I don't use that word in its broader pejorative sense, although I think there is some of that too. But just generally speaking, you get the geographic diversity, and the geographic diversity itself can lead to some increase in racial diversity as well.
There is a bill in the state legislature along those lines. We'll be following that here at WPR. Let's bring in a caller now. Kay is with us in Madison. Kay, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am on the side of holistic diversity, partly in terms of my own experience. I am sight disabled. I'm blind in one eye, and therefore I didn't test well on standardized entrance tests such as the SAT ones. On the other hand, by my DNA, I have some indigenous genes that gave me a very good memory. So I came out with excellent grades. So I'm two races, 14 nationalities. And so what do you, and also, but I look like a wasp. So what do you do with me?
Okay. Thanks for the call. Anuj, I want to focus in on the disability part of that. This is a ruling on race-based affirmative action here. Would it affect a program, say, offering accommodations to someone or accounting for something that says, hey, this person, because of an eye problem, has trouble taking these standardized tests?
Rob, you're exactly right. This is a case about race. The 14th Amendment, and in particular, Title VI of the Civil Rights Act, I shouldn't say the 14th Amendment is not limited to race, but Title VI of the Civil Rights Act is, and this opinion is about race. So if we're talking about disability, that would not be something that would be affected in any way. The caller did refer to her indigenous background, and I do think there are some kinds of preferences for indigenous students, and so those may be subject to the ruling, but disability would not be.
Okay, thanks for sharing your experience. Anuj Desai is with us, law professor at the UW Law School. We're looking at the U.S. Supreme Court decision yesterday, striking down college admission policies that include racial and ethnic diversity as factors. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of that decision? What questions do you have about what went into it and its possible impact? Do you think college campuses should try to maintain a diverse student body, including racially and ethnically diverse? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We continue our talk with UW Law School professor Anuj Desai about the U.S. Supreme Court's decision this week to overturn race-based admission policies on college campuses. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls now. Bob is with us in Milwaukee. Bob, hi.
Hey, how you doing? A quick question. So before, I guess, today, what I'm interested in is how did the colleges actually practically apply this idea of affirmative action? Was it affirmed by including some reflection of the demographic distribution of folks as a whole in the nation, or some other means that somehow afforded particular individuals some special advantage over other individuals in particular cases hither or there, kind of more subjectively? Other than that, I just had...
Oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because I'm thinking that the new advantage here is like Whitey's going to be sending their kids to inner schools, the city schools, so they can get in that top 3%, and it's going to work really great.
Bob, thanks for the call. That law is still not in place here in Wisconsin yet. But Anuj, to his main point, I imagine different colleges and universities did this a little differently. But in general, it seems like it was, you know, race can be, could have been before this ruling, a factor among many others. Is that the norm that we seem to have seen?
Yes, that's exactly right, Rob. The race was never a sole determinant. And I think, you know, one thing that the schools would always say is that everybody who's admitted was qualified to attend. I think what the majority saw was a pretty consistent percentage of students year after year of each of the racial groups being admitted to the schools. And that sort of gave them a clue that there really was some an attempt to make those percentages match something. And, you know, the caller's question, Bob's question, you know, was match what? I think the University of North Carolina tried to make it match the state of North Carolina. It is a state institution, and it generally had a lower number of African-American students than the percentage of African Americans in North Carolina, which, as you probably know, is actually quite high. Harvard also attempted to make it match the number in the country. But, you know, the reality was also that Asian Americans were being admitted in numbers far above their percentage in the country. And so what in effect that meant is that you know, whites would be admitted in numbers lower than their percentage. But there was, you know, it seemed from the numbers, the way the Supreme Court saw it, to be an attempt to create percentages that would be matched year after year.
Time for one more caller. Mike is with us in Madison. Mike, hi.
Hi, I agree with the Supreme Court ruling. I think it's for 20, 30 years that it's been biased against a particular race and qualifications, your educational abilities, whether or not you volunteer and being a resident of the particular state, especially in those colleges and institutions that receive either federal or state funding, especially in the case of Wisconsin. Priority should be given to the state taxpayers, kids or residents that have been in the state for a long time.
Mike, so I got you. Just about out of time. Thanks a lot for the call, Mike. And with just our last half a minute or so, Anuj, are you watching for a future case, a future challenge, the way universities do these things?
I'm not watching for one, but it really will depend on what the universities do and how people respond to it. So if the universities continue to use race in a way that the courts are skeptical of, then I suspect there will be lawsuits. But as you heard from Chancellor Mnuchin, I think most universities are committed to following the law as the Supreme Court has laid it down. And there may be disagreements on the margins about what exactly that means, but I suspect most universities will at least try to follow the law. But there may be disagreements about what it means going forward, and then there will be more lawsuits.
Thanks to our guest today, Anuj Desai is a law professor at the UW Law School. He joined us for a look at the U.S. Supreme Court decision blocking colleges and universities from using race as a factor in admissions.